Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm here with my co-host today, Burl Love. Hi, Burl.
Hi, Sherry. Sherry, you look giddy right now.
I'm very excited about today's guest. It is somebody that a lot of you have heard of. We've written a lot about her.
Donna Salyers.
Yes.
Donna Salyers, the founder and, you know, CEO, let's say, of Fabulous Furs. But man, there's so much more with
Hotel
her.
Covington, her family really helped develop Covington. I'm going to lean towards fashion here, but we'll talk about all of the things.
Well, okay, so our special guest segment will be heavy on fashion, but more on, I mean,
business.
I love when we
business.
Get to tell the story behind the story of, you know, people in our community who have just had amazing careers and lives. And so we'll get into how Donna Salyers became the, you know, world-renowned
and reveal a
person.
Little bit of how she got her start.
Right, in the world of
that's
fashion,
near and
specifically
dear to our
faux furs, yeah. But let's, speaking of like, another sweet spot of yours would be politics. And there was some news on the political front in Cincinnati.
I consider big news this week. Out of the clear blue on, well, for everyone except the person that this involves, on Tuesday, I got wind that there was big news at City Hall. And I really was kind of like, I don't know what that is. I will say one of the sad things is there were some rumors like going around and like people kept hearing that. And they're like, does it have to do with corruption? Which I hated to hear.
Right.
But I was like, no, because I'm hearing the news is very political and not coming up from any sort of criminal justice way. So
right.
I kind of had to like dispel rumors.
But isn't it funny that when like you start hearing like, oh, there's something going down at City Hall, the first thing you think of is like, hope, you know, is someone else being investigated for corruption?
So that was not my guess. I'm not going to say what my guess was, but that guess was not the right guess. So it does turn out that Councilman Reggie Harris, who was elected in 2021, is resigning to take a new job at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. And it was really right in his wheelhouse. So Reggie Harris is leaving.
So this is basically a position in the Biden administration.
It is. It is a political position, mm-hmm. But it is very much about doing good related to affordable housing. I'm going to say what his title is. I have it written down here because it is a mouthful and
All right.
keep forgetting what it is. It's the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Economic Development in the Department of Housing and Urban Development.
Okay.
But he is going to be overseeing the disbursement of $7 billion into communities in the United States to improve housing. This is background before he came to City Hall. It is the things that have been near and dear to his heart at City Hall. And so he'll keep doing that, but not here in Cincinnati.
So lots to unpack here. First and foremost, and you might not know the answer to this question, but it seems a little late in a administration to take an appointment like that with the election, you know, basically less or, you know, almost a month away.
This is true. This has been a question for a lot of people. I think this is just not something you turn down when your passion is urban development and affordable housing. I think everyone in City Hall would be betting on Kamala Harris to win. You know, it's pretty Democratic down there. So I think that the belief is that she's definitely winning. That's what you hear from the candidates. They're all kind of working on behalf of her. So he does believe that that will stay. But even if this ends up being short term and Kamala Harris does not win, to have this on your resume, you take this somewhere else and you say, I did these kind of community development
right.
plans. It's a very big deal to have that in that kind of role that you want your future to be. And quite frankly, and I've said this and everyone is like really kind of realizes he's probably not coming back here. Like if he could always come back here and he would definitely win. So he could come back, he could win, he could do things later, come back, run for mayor and many years, like,
and even if Harris doesn't win, there is the possibility. I mean, that's a huge operation there.
No, it's a political appointment. They're done on January 20th.
So that would be it.
That's it. They
okay.
get walked out.
But what I'm kind of more leaning at is you said, you know, he might not come back. He could come back. There's plenty of things to do in Washington.
This is true.
So
think tanks. I mean,
right.
This is just going to add to his repertoire of development.
So even if the political appointment is over, it's kind of like a foot in the door opportunity for him because those people usually land on their feet. It's not like, you know, they file for unemployment.
Yeah, I think the experience is
once you hit that level, it opens up a lot of doors. And so, yes, it's one of those things you don't say no to. Well, congrats, Reggie. Give us a reminder of when he ran for city council. What was he running for? What brought him into local politics?
You know, his background really is development, and he wanted to do more good. One of his mentors was Yvette Simpson. He kind of like worked on behalf of her campaigns, and she's like, your energy, and he does, he has high energy. She's like, your energy and your passion really should translate into a council seat. We were really at a pivot point in 21 where it was going to be all these new council members. So many people were term limited out. We were at a pivot point at City Hall, and he really thought I could do more. And he was talking to me on Tuesday, and he said that he looks at life and what he can do and have the biggest impact. And to elected office at that point, 2021, was it. And now this job is it when he wants to have the largest impact. That is like a guiding principle for him.
All right. So what does this do to city council? What is the procedure now when you have an open seat?
So Councilwoman Mika Owens, per the charter, the council people choose someone to pick their successor, someone else on council. He chose Mika Owens, and so she's going to pick this. Now, Reggie picked Greg Landsman's replacement, and he had a process that was I loved as a reporter, and I got to know many interesting people in our community. It was rigid's not really the right word, but with deadlines, and you had to have a resume, and you had to fill out the questions
he
asked.
So there was a process. It wasn't just, I'm picking my friend. He really vetted people. And
Mika, of course, is vetting people, but it's more of her own process. It's not going to be the same as that. I think it is going to move very quickly. I have basically until midnight every night since the recording been on the phone, like talking about who might it be, what does the city council need. I'm sick of my own voice talking about it, but the guessing games have begun of like who is going to get the job. Now this person gets appointed for a year and whatever 3 months that are left, because the city
election
next year, so they'll have a chance really to make some inroads without having to run for election
right
at the moment.
And even though it's an appointment, you are running as the incumbent at that point because you're in the seat. So I'm going to put you on a hot seat.
Do it.
Give me some names. What are you hearing?
I did write a story about this, of the names that I was hearing. A couple more have popped up today. The two that have really bubbled to the top are Colleen Reynolds, and she is at DSD Advisors, which is the government relations firm for Dinsmore. And she does a lot with the developers in town. And like, honestly, I have to say, she really knows her stuff when it comes to housing, which I think Reggie, that is a role on council that is very much needed. So her name is really up there. She's the Oakley Community Council president. She has been like a community activist for years. I love when council people come up through the community councils, because there is no better way to understand this city than to have been involved in a community council, because you have to deal with your communities and you have to deal with City Hall. Anna Albee is like that.
Okay.
She came from the Madisonville Community Council, and it's just such good experience. And Ozzy Davis, and we have written a lot about him over the years. He is an Avondale community activist who's very in touch with the youth of our community and just really has a pipeline to the coaches and the kids. And he is on the front lines of being an activist, like anti-violence and getting people to calm down, just in like an activist role. And so his name is really, I've heard a lot as options. And I'm sure there's actually people I probably haven't heard of, but those two names, I mean, we're on day two. We're on day two.
Well, good for Cincinnati City Council that we have someone leaving abruptly who's not going to prison, someone who's accepting a baller political appointment.
It really is.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, I can tell you're chomping at the bit. Should we bring on Donna?
Definitely.
All right, let's do it.
special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. I'm very excited to welcome Donna Saliers today. We're going to talk about all of her ventures and especially fabulous furs. I told you, Burl, I'm turning it into a fashion podcast.
I know. This
it's
is
like the slow creep.
We're going to have to.
Burl's really happy about that, I can tell.
I am happy. Can I kick things off with why I thought Donna would be a wonderful guest for us?
Yes.
So at the last Great Living Cincinnatian awards or honoree, you know, where the chamber honors people who've really made an impact.
There were 1,700 people there waiting for me to say something intelligent.
Right. Well, you did not let them down. I was struck because I know you as this like successful entrepreneur, you know, the founder of Faux Fabulous Furs, which are faux furs. And you actually, when you were giving your thanks and remarks, took us way back to your start as a columnist for the Cincinnati Enquirer, and how you were frustrated because the sewing columnist at the time...
her name was Lucille Rivers. And she was big time syndicated. And I thought, good God.
You thought, I can do this better. So you reached out to the editor and publisher at the time. Do you remember who that was? It wasn't me, because we're talking the 70s, right?
Cheryl Bills was it was called the People Section. And I don't remember the editor.
People Section.
Yeah, it was the People Section. And it had all kinds of interesting fashion and, you know, entertainment and decorating and all kinds of things. And I wrote to the editor, but it ended up with Cheryl Bills, and she was the People Section.
So you started writing this sewing column for the Enquirer, and that launched a new career for you.
Launched my life.
Yeah, well, talk about that.
I had two children in diapers, and I would read things and think, good Lord, who writes this poorly? I've never written anything, but I know that you can do better than this. So I wrote that letter to the editor, and I was astounded to even get an answer to say, well, send us six samples. We think it's pretty bad. And I did. And those were my first six columns. And I was off to the races. And if you're making $25 a week, you'll say, how about, I think I better get syndicated. I don't really know what that means, but I want to do better than $25 a week. And so I started sending out letters of inquiry, it was called. And I discovered this great thing called Writer's Digest, and it's hundreds of newspapers at that time. And lo and behold, it only took 7 years, and I was syndicated. And now I'm...
So now your column's appearing all over the country. Mm-hmm. And you're starting to build up a fan base, and then you became what we would call today like a multimedia star, because that launched television for you.
Yes, well, so I thought, I've got to do more than this. This is dumb, and I don't know why I'm so aggressive. I was just born that way. But I contacted there was the Noon News, and it was targeting women. And I said, would you like to have a 3-minute segment on how to sew Halloween costumes? And I got my own little TV spot.
And this was on what?
I think it was on, I was on all of them at one time or another. CPO, I think.
So Channel 9 WCPO locally was the first to put you on the air.
Yeah. And then Charlie Murdoch was putting together cable programming for women. And I was one of the people he called because I knew all about sewing and fashion, and I fit into this programming thing for cable TV. And lo and behold, I have my own half-hour cable TV show, and all I had to do was be the on-air talent, create the content, prepare the samples, and do everything. I'm sure it was a very low-budget show. But I was making big bucks for my trouble. And you, first you make 13 shows and then you make another 13. And oh my goodness, I have to go to New York to do this TV show, because we had big time sponsors and we would go to like Central Park and Tavern on the Green and Ole Cassini's home. And oh my goodness, Ole Cassini, he designs in Simplicity.
So you were like a host.
I was
of,
the
of
host,
the show.
The talent, the everything.
Oh my gosh.
And as I'm go to Ole Cassini's home, wow, this is amazing. And it had been a snowy day in New York, and his housekeeper came as she was leaving for the market, and she was pulling on her mink coat and saying, "Can I get anyone tea before I leave?" And I say, "She's wearing a mink coat. She's the housekeeper. I'm the star. I do everything. And where is my mink coat?" So next trip to New York, I had made myself a fake fur coat that looked very, very good. And I had some connections because I had been writing my column. I knew where mills were, and I can call and say, "Hey, you probably got some fur better than Care Bear fur."
Better than Care Bear fur?
People were making stuffed toys at that time.
Yeah.
In the 80s, we made stuffed toys.
Okay.
They weren't made in China back then.
Okay.
And so you would spend time making your kids stuffed toys. So
okay, I gotcha.
It was a very different time, girl.
I gotcha. Okay.
So I made that coat and wore it to New York, and people would stop me on the street and say, "That is a fabulous coat." And I was dumbfounded, and then pretty smug about it because I finished it, you know, last night. And so I wore that coat, wrote about it, did classes on it. And 5 years later, I now have some cash. And
because now you're a media star in New York.
Yeah, right. Right.
Do you still have that coat?
No, I sold it in a garage sale.
Oh my gosh. Someone has it. You know what? I mean, I have some of my grandma's coats. Like, they don't really go anywhere. It's somewhere. Right, right. It is somewhere.
Right. Yeah. That's an interesting thought. But so I, it's very unlike me to hide something from my husband, including the $5,000 in cash that I had socked away for a rainy day. And so I'm thinking, I'm going to buy myself a full-length mink coat, and Jim will be so surprised. Incredibly surprised. And I, as I'm driving to the fur salon, and I would drop off my columns and then head to the fur salon, Paul Harvey comes into my car radio describing a London toy manufacturer making kittens into mink teddy bears.
And for anyone listening that doesn't remember Paul Harvey, he was a famous nationally syndicated radio talk show host. He had a couple different pieces that he did. One was The Rest of the Story.
I was Arrest of the Story.
I bet you were Arrest of the Story. And he would always sign off by saying, "Paul Harvey.
Good day.
Good day." Just like that, with that, you know, good day. My parents always had that on the radio.
Mm-hmm. It was easy to find. It was on probably 5-6 times a day, just for
yes,
5 minutes.
Yeah, widely syndicated all over the radio here. So, okay, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just wanted to give people the context
sure.
that this isn't just some run-of-the-mill radio show. This is the Paul Harvey
right.
radio spot, yeah, thing
well,
that he did.
Well, he was out of Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and I heard Paul Harvey say, yeah, they really do turn kittens into mink teddy bears. And, of course, what could I think, but I'm about to buy a full-length kitty coat. And so I was horrified with that thought, and I came to my senses and said, well, just because I don't have pet minks doesn't mean that they don't suffer when somebody skins them alive. And it just, I thought of fur in a totally different context in that moment. And I'm sure it was just the universe telling me to start a faux fur company. And so I took my $5,000, did not buy the coat, and instead started a sewing kit company called Fabulous Furs. And it was easy to come up with that name because every time somebody saw me, they'd say, "Oh my goodness, that's a fabulous coat." And so all these things just fell in my path, and I was just responding to the universe. And I've got a sewing kit company, and the first year in business we did about $300,000, and it was out of my basement, and I was it. I was the soul. I did everything. I packed, I designed, I received, I shipped, I did.
Did you
everything.
Have people helping you with
of
the...
Of course not. No.
You sewed them all too?
No, no. Oh, it's
okay.
A kit, bro.
Oh, the kit.
You
got
will be
you.
Challenged to
I,
sew this coat
I gotcha. Okay.
But still, I sold, I guess, thousands of them. Thousands.
You know, you're taking me back because I remember, like, my mom getting... patterns mm-hmm. to sew things mm-hmm. like Halloween costumes mm-hmm. and
course.
Whatever because people sewed back then.
It was a big business, yeah. A huge segment of the economy. Well, not the entire economy, but there were many fabric stores, many chains,
right.
Many support businesses.
So you made these kits.
Wait, you're... this is where I reveal that I was in 4-H. In the 80s, and it was a sewing 4-H group, and it was called Stitch and Chat.
Stitch and Chat.
And we made clothes, and we went to the county fair, the best county fair, no offense to Hamilton County, in the state, the Canfield Fair, and we put on fashion shows, and we had booths showing off all of our sewing work. So I understand about the sewing.
Sewing is like that. You take something, you take nothing and turn it into something. And people they have gratification in creating, and it's a very creative thing. And it's also rather tedious, and not everybody does it well. But I thought everybody could sew my coat, because my grandma taught me how to sew, and she was the most meticulous. You did everything perfectly, sort of couture style. And so my kits took off. And then I started hearing from, like, movie stars, because, like... Loretta Swit, who was Hot Lips in MASH, the people started writing about me. They didn't bother contacting me. The San Francisco Chronicle did a story about my sewing kits, and Loretta Swit called and said, I don't know how to sew. I'm sure you know someone who does. And I said, I'll turn it over to the ready-to-wear department. And that night, I made her coat in my kitchen. And because
you turned it over to the non-existent ready-to-wear
department.
And that was the birth of your ready-to-wear department. You actually sewed a coat for
Loretta Swick.
Loretta Swick.
And she was a big deal.
She was.
I mean, that was like
Hot Lips Houlihan on MASH.
Yes,
yeah.
MASH was like mm-hmm. the number one show and so on. And
Well, you were living in Covington at that point, right?
No, my husband and I lived in White Oak, and I had a big kitchen island, and I could lay out a coat. Kids go to bed, I cut that and sew it up, and I'll have it finished by morning. And I didn't mind working a lot, and I didn't need a lot of sleep. And Now we're a ready-to-wear company because she started showing it around Hollywood, and we were on Designing Women and anybody who
Wait, did Delta Burke wear for...
Yes, yes, she did. And I can remember that segment, and I can remember sending out the coats because the person who called and said, I want to see your best fur coats, your fake fur coats. I said, well, I'll send the best we have. And he said, I want you to know I hate fake fur. And so I screwed up my courage a few days later to say, well, I see the coats were delivered. What do you think? And he said, they're fabulous. Really? And so you get enough feedback like that. It raises your confidence because I also did... My husband, his friend, says, why don't you come and do a fashion show for the office? And I did, and I'm sitting in the lobby with my rack of coats, and some attorney walks through and says, ooh, what are those? I said, oh, they're fake fur. And he said, I like the real thing. And so you run into that as
right.
well. So not everyone loves everything, but... Maybe they would.
But there's one sitting here. There's one sitting here with us now. It's beautiful.
Okay.
It feels
let me tell you,
so soft.
Let me give you a context.
Okay.
You've heard of the Neiman Marcus Christmas book.
Yes, I have.
Products have been in 12 consecutive Christmas books. They only do the best.
They only do the best.
And I've always said Fabulous Furs is the finest. I don't want to do anything less. And if I'm not, if I wouldn't wear it, I'm not going to sell it. And if people have come to me, like a leading TV shopping network, and said, wow, this is a really beautiful coat. It's expensive. Can you do something cheaper? And I said, no, I don't think I can. I'm sorry, I cannot. I just don't. I want quality. And I think the people that I want to work with, who I hope are customers, they like quality, they like unique, and they want something special and something they're proud to wear. Is it faux? Is it animal? Well, it's all faux. It's all animal friendly. And by the way, it's probably machine washable as well. And so that's kind of been my guiding light. So today we're sold in 46 countries. And if you ask me to make a list of 46 countries, it would take me a while. And we have 4,000 wholesale accounts. Mm-hmm. And I'm very proud that people like Neiman Marcus look at us. And when Neiman's, we did the first face-off, we say, we can do private label. We'll put your label in it. No, we actually like the Fabulous Furs reputation. And so it's been my challenge to come up with creative ideas. What would Neiman's like this year? They've never sold. I know. Fur seat covers for for a golf cart. And so we did. And
that is so Neiman's.
Everyone needs. But you know.
But the Neiman's catalog is for.
It's over the top.
It is, but it's for the person who has everything. And then you're like, I know. Golf cart seat covers.
Yes. And they're machine washable. And they're actually quite practical.
So with that big of an operation, you are surely not a one-woman show anymore.
How, thank God. I lived through that.
How big is Fabulous Furs? Like, in terms of...
We might have 60 people on our payroll.
Okay.
We're based in Covington. And I was blessed with a real estate, commercial real estate husband.
Well, we're going to get into that, Pete, because if it's not enough mm-hmm. that you launch this world-renowned faux fur company, you've got a lot, you got other things going on in that, in the real estate area. But let's keep going with the story of the furs. So 60 people, you mentioned the number of countries that you're in. In prep for this show, I was boning up on your story, and
did you find some celebrity customers?
Well, I mean,
do
Oprah,
tell. I love
Oprah
celebrities.
Oprah Winfrey included you on her list of favorite things.
Hold on.
Okay,
not just her favorite thing, the favorite thing, because it was on the cover.
Oh,
Oprah
wow!
Of O.
O magazine, mm-hmm. yes, and that was a powerhouse magazine.
Yeah,
when she had her 5 day a week TV show,
right?
And Adam Glassman was always the creative director there at O magazine, and we were at a trade show in Atlanta, and Adam came through, and he's from a family of New York furriers, and so if he sees really beautiful faux fur, he knows what he's talking about. And my daughter called from the trade show and said, Mom, O magazine wants to photograph a bunch of stuff as soon as we're going to ship it to New York so they can do the photos of our things. And that was our introduction to O magazine. And we were in many.
So Oprah would have been wearing it on the cover, right? Because she was always on the cover of O magazine.
She was always the cover model, and and eventually they called for a coat, and I said, I'm going to go start sewing it right now. And it was a white coat, and it was beautiful. It was absolutely gorgeous. And then it goes on to Entertainment Tonight because they talk to her about her favorite things. And then her best friend, Gail King, got one. And the publisher of the magazine got one. And then her daughter got one, and so on and so on. And they talk about the Oprah effect. And in that case, it was about a 300,000 $1 million in revenue effect. And I've had so many breaks like that. And if I don't help people, hit me in the head, because I've had more than my share. And you think, what could ever happen after this? O Magazine? Well, do you know the rock band Kiss?
We do.
I've heard of them.
We do.
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking
All
about.
Right. They,
We have to pause here for a minute. Had you heard of the rock band Kiss before?
I did not want my children to listen to Kiss growing up. Good Lord.
Now they seem tame almost,
compared to
what... Yes, but okay, so yes, we have heard of the rock band Kiss. I'm thinking Paul Stanley, the lead singer, and his...
I love Paul Stanley.
Character. Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking back, all the pictures I've seen of him wearing fur... Mm-hmm. I bet it was
Guess
this.
Guess who's? Of course it is. On Instagram.
Wow.
Everywhere.
Okay.
God sent that man into my life. I tell you.
That's amazing. Okay. Well, you know, when we interview guests on this show, I'm mentally keeping track of things that might make a good headline or a good lead or whatever. You're just one after the other. I mean, I don't even know where to start with you, Donna. So, so Kiss. Yeah. So Paul Stanley wears...
Were you surprised at that
furs.
Point that a man
surprised?
Had reached out?
Pick me up off the
that
floor.
A man, that a man had reached out to be...
Yes, I was very surprised. It started when his manager, the Kiss manager, called and said, hey, the boys want to come up and shop.
The boys.
They're performing at Rupp Arena in Lexington, which is about an hour drive. And they want to come by jet. So they'll land at... Lunkin and then limo over, and I'm thinking to myself, this is crazy. They could drive, but they did not. And they came, and 11 of them came to shop, and it was fabulous. And as so they bought a lot of stuff. I mean, they probably spent, I don't know, 7,000. Lovely, gracious.
That's pocket
people.
Change for Paul Stanley and
And they
Gene
did
Simmons.
Not come in makeup, and it was not, it was Paul plus, you know, other people. And they would, he was not wearing his Kiss costume. but he's distinctive looking. He has shoulder length hair and so on. And looks very, very fit. Very fit. And it's like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They've been there for over 2 hours. And aren't they nervous about getting back to Rupp Arena, for goodness sake? And he turned and said, why doesn't everyone come to the concert tonight? We'll give you backstage passes and, front row seats and all that.
Just what you wanted.
Well, actually, I was living vicariously in Florida because I had been kidnapped by my husband to be in Florida because we're Florida residents. And I'm not there. Okay, but take lots of pictures. So my daughter gave me a blow-by-blow account. And so...
What year was this?
It was maybe 2021. 2021.
Okay. Oh, I fictioned it earlier.
And this was the beginning of their long, long, long farewell tour.
Yes, that went on for quite a few years. And so we have Hotel Covington. And so there's a nice van, and somebody drove the van and filled the van with people who all went, and they made arrangements. The manager is on the cell phone saying, you're going to park here by all the equipment vans, and we'll get you, whisk you through, and then whisk you out before traffic mounts, and you'll get your kids to school.
Did they wear the furs on stage that night?
No. But lots of pictures and food and just so gracious and so everything. And
it seems like you know him now.
I read his book.
Okay.
And I've talked to him quite a few times. And he has an amazing story in that he's deaf. He has one deaf ear, born that way. And I think he was always the underdog. And so he became a very kind person who has paid for many surgeries of children. He created a foundation that would correct facial problems like he had, that so affected him in his life. So a great book, I think, Stop the Music. Those are a few of our breaks. Oh, and Adele. Of course, Adele. Oh. And I'm talking January, so eight, nine months ago. There's Adele. I didn't know she's a customer, but she's at LeBron James' birthday party wearing one of our coats. And we were dumbfounded. When did this happen?
You didn't know she even had one?
No. Just like we didn't know Paul Stanley. It wasn't like he called and said, hey, I want all free stuff.
Right.
Some do. But most do not. They just want to buy something fabulous, and we're happy to ship it out.
So do you still do some of the designing?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And Mariah Carey. When Mariah Carey.
These are big names.
The Queen of Christmas. She did a CBS Christmas special. They called, and she needed a cape, and it would have to be custom, because by the time she puts on her heels, she's like 5'10", and our lead designer, Kristen Bolt, is also 5'10", so she became our fit model, and we made Mariah Carey's Christmas cape that was on the CBS Christmas special.
Was it all white fur?
Of course it was. White pink. Of course.
Duh, Burl.
Okay. So. All right, I'm rethinking things because I've had my eye on some leopard print ones, but now I'm like, maybe white now.
Well, Ivy had so many amazing breaks. Like, we were the Miss Universe pageant. They called and said, could you donate 15 coats for the 15 finalists? And, oh, we can give you free tickets. Do you have to talk to somebody? I said, no, we can do that, and I'll be there.
I'm in charge.
I will be there. My husband and I will fly out.
So you're still designing?
I still do a lot. I don't do nearly what I used to. There's more than me. Thank God we have three
designers.
Yeah.
How soon out do you plan, like, collections?
We're working right now on 2025, so about a year out, without knowing anything about how 24, the trends, you know, you read the trends, you do the forecast. And even before we can read the numbers, because they haven't really occurred, because people don't really start buying coats until October.
Typically. Like the Mob Wives trend that popped up on TikTok last year.
And that,
I mean, that came,
like,
out of nowhere. That was organic from real people and not
agreed.
The fashion houses.
Right. Oh, girl, we know better. So I've been blessed beyond belief. So when people come along and say, you know, I just need a donation, I say, when? How much?
Well, we also have to talk about the fact that you and your husband are responsible for a big chunk of what we'll call the Covington Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
You said you were fortunate because you have, you know, your husband Jim is into commercial real estate. Because you needed a
mm-hmm.
facility,
mm-hmm.
But also the Hotel Covington,
mm-hmm.
which is now a destination for many people.
Mm-hmm.
You have the,
because it is also fabulous.
It is fabulous.
Thank you.
You have the restaurant there. You have
Coppins.
You have a place to hold events.
Coppins.
Uh-huh. It's a former
department store called Coppins, and that's where all the rich people shopped when I was a kid. And I worked at the store next door beginning when I was 13. It was called Goldsmith's, and I knew the wealthy people shopped over at Coppins. I'm over here selling to people more like me, blue-collar people. And that was my first introduction to selling. And it does a person a lot of good when you're 13, if you can walk up to someone and look them in the eye and say, what would you like today? I'll help you find
that's it. Good life skills, yes.
Yes, yes. And so Covington, to be part of that renaissance is absolutely wonderful. And it started because my husband bought the Woolworth building. Because when I got my first job, I went over to the Woolworth building, to the soda fountain, and said to the woman on the next stool, let me buy you a drink. I just got my first job and I'm 13. I'm sure I saw that on TV or something. So I bought two Cokes. And when Jim, he's commercial real estate and we're living in White Oak, and he came home and said, have you ever heard of the Woolworth Building? I said, oh my gosh, Jim, when I got my first job, that's what happened.
Where did you grow up?
In Covington.
Okay. That's what I thought. So that was
home.
Your neighborhood, five and dime, really. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So he, not knowing that you had a history with Woolworth, mm-hmm. comes home and says, have you heard of the Woolworth
actually,
Building?
It was in the middle 80s, and I started Fabulous Furs in 1989. So there was no Fabulous Furs. And I said, oh, gosh, yeah, that's where I celebrated when I got my first job. So he bought that building and put it in my name. And
as a present?
Yes. And he's very sweet that way.
That is a very thoughtful present. I love that.
And
well, it's not like he can buy his wife a fur coat. You know, he had to think differently.
You're true.
Yeah.
But no, Burl, he came home and said he bought the Woolworth Building. I said, why? Why? Do you know what Covington is like, Jim? Woolworth was paying 47 cents a square foot in perpetuity. They could not make it work. So they stayed about 2 years. And so we're out of here. We can't make money, even at 47 cents a square foot. So Jim is now holding this 40,000 square foot piece of real estate that no one would think of using. And he was challenged to do what with it? Well, he started a banquet facility. And now that's called the Madison Event Center. And it's in the Knott Hall of Fame. And it's now, let's see, let me do the math. So it's almost probably 30 years old. And he's always had the same attitude as I, that if I didn't want to eat that food and be in that place, I'm not going to do it. So we're going to make it the best as quickly as we can. We'll improve it. And he did. And then he had to buy another building because he's got more weddings than his staff can accommodate, and buy another building, turn that into more banquet. And then now you need a hotel because where do these people stay? They have to take a shuttle from a courtyard or something.
Right.
Why not have a hotel right across the street?
A hotel not like any other chain,
a boutique hotel.
Have you stayed there?
Right.
I have not stayed
there. We stayed there once on our anniversary.
Oh, thank you.
I am there a lot, like to eat and go to the bar.
We were just talking about the brunch not that long ago.
Thank you.
Brunch is good.
Thank you. Well, we've had wonderful community support.
Covington has grown up around it too. There's so much there now.
Right. And people are actually living in the neighborhood because as the neighborhood improved, now buildings are very affordable compared to Cincinnati. And the neighborhood's looking pretty good and it's improving.
It looks amazing. That area there and then walking over to Mainstrasse, it's impressive.
Thank you.
As someone, who grew up here, and just like Cincinnati and over the Rhine and all of that stuff, just to see the reinvestment in the core, after years and years of growing out and pushing the suburbs out, to see this, on both sides of the river.
And many apartments sprang up, and now urban living is kind of cool.
It is. But that takes reinvestment. That takes money. And that's where your family came in. Like, you put your money where your mouth is and said, we need to bring this place back.
We said, we want to continue eating. We are going to improve the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And you don't wait for somebody to come and do it for you. You don't hope for economic development. You develop your economic.
Right.
You develop your neighborhood. Don't give it to somebody else.
Well,
do what you can, right?
All of this. Last year, as we said in the beginning, you were honored as a Great Living Cincinnatian. That's a who's who of people who have made a difference over the years.
I was dumbfounded.
Wow.
Albert Sabin. Really?
Yeah.
Gosh.
The guy that cured polio. And then,
and then
the woman that makes fake furs.
Oh,
I'm sorry,
goodness.
Faux furs. But no, so deserving. I want to ask you, like, do you have anything cooking that you can tell us now? Like, what's next for you or your husband or you guys together?
My mind is racing about what I can reveal. And what
all
if,
of
I,
the things.
If I did reveal, who would kill me first?
We don't care about that. We care about breaking news on this podcast. Yes. You can deal with the fallout.
The next Thanks. Big project over at Lunken, right?
Yeah.
That's still kind of in the works, right?
Probably.
Okay.
If Guy Van Rooyen, our son-in-law, if he lives long enough, he'll develop Lunken. Because it's not easy to deal with like six government entities, mm-hmm. all of whom counter one another, and, you know, the Corps of Engineers. And
which they should just listen to your advice, which is don't wait. Stop. Just say yes.
Well,
things
you know,
need to be developed over there. There's such a beautiful plan. We've written a lot about it.
Good.
Not recently.
Well,
but
there are
plans that we've seen. Just say yes.
Regulations being what they are, and, you know, bureaucracy being what it is, everybody wants to get their little two cents in there.
Right.
And you just persist. And if you live long enough, you'll live to see it happen and not something that your children carry on.
Well, you've been a delight to talk to.
Well, my pleasure.
You
mean we're done?
Well, I don't. I want you to keep doing this forever. But do you have like a plan? Like, you just every year you're like, okay, we're planning for 25. We're planning for 26. You don't want to go to Florida anytime soon, do you?
No, I don't. I'm going next week, Jim.
Well, maybe. Depends, you know, Helene is doing the
well,
hurricane.
Well, hopefully Helene will go northeast and out to sea, and it's a fast-moving storm, right?
Yes, it is.
That's the best we can hope for here. But hurricanes have been hitting Florida since the beginning of time, so you can't worry about it, right?
That's true. You just have to be prepared.
Yes.
All right. Well, if you're not going to reveal any secrets today.
But you'll be my first call.
Okay.
You'll be
Sherry will be expecting that. And so if I've been listening to this and I want to get a faux fur, how do I get a fur, Donna? Where do I go?
Kind of
we have some gorgeous men's coats.
A pink one.
Oh, for men
wear
pink?
Man. Well, she brought a catalog. We'll peruse it together after.
We can do better than that.
Okay. Well, we got
follow
all October.
Paul Stanley's lead.
Okay.
Do you have something to do with pink?
Yeah, I'm one of the ambassadors for Real
Are
Men
you?
Wear Pink. I am.
Are you going to be at Paint the Square Pink?
I will.
I'll see you there.
Okay, that's great. And that night, Donna, we have Paint the Grail Pink. Which
October 2nd,
yeah, to kick off.
I already know
Breast
what I'm
Cancer
wearing.
America. Wait, yeah.
Well, how cool is that?
Yeah. So yeah, the group is gonna cross the $2 million threshold of raising money for breast cancer
research.
Well,
that's outstanding.
This year.
Outstanding.
Yes, we're well on our way. So well, that'll be fun. Okay, we'll have to get, you know, we'll have to conspire to see like what might be possible, but. I'm really giving you opportunity to plug it for, like, there's a guy listening who wants to surprise his significant other, buy one for himself, or like Sherry, you want to get your hands on this catalog and see what you might get. Like, I'm
FabulousFurs.com.
That's simple as
We're
that.
We're on 11th Street. It's called Fabulous West 11th.
Okay.
Named in our honor on our 30th anniversary, thanks to Tom West in Covington.
Another reason to go to Covington. All right. Well, thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
All right. Well, I have a story to finish, but I think I might go shopping before I do that. I'm just saying.
You got the catalogs in front of you. You've already like turned the corner of a couple pages. That full-length purple one, I think, is you, Sherry.
I did like that a lot.
Yeah. All right. Well, we could have talked to Donna forever. What a great story. What a great...
And to hear it in her own voice was good.
Oh,
yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to take some credit on behalf of the Enquirer for launching this fantastic career.
And
she got her start writing a sewing column.
She talked about the people section, which I loved.
You know what it was called? The woman's page.
Oh.
I mean, how archaic and...
Yeah. But I miss like sections like that.
Yeah.
You know, it is a different time in newspapers, but I miss the sections like that. Like growing up, I would read The Plain Dealer, and the Wednesday they would have the food section, and Thursdays they would have a whole style section.
Right.
And so I really like those are entry points, honestly, to journalism, like the kind of the comics when you're young, then you kind of start reading the columns.
Yeah, for sure.
Then you become a City Hall reporter and that's your whole life till midnight every night.
Right.
But those were entry points of reading.
Yeah.
And I miss those kind of stories and days.
Well, Donna is a force of nature, so we thank her again for being on the podcast. And we alluded to when we were talking to Donna that we're about to embark on yet another campaign for Cincinnati Men Wear Pink.
Do you have all your outfits picked out? That's like, you know, 31 days of pink.
I'm thinking I need to like see what she's got in the her lineup of pink fur.
You do need to do that.
But no, yes, I've been an ambassador for Men Wear Pink now. I think this is my fifth year. So I have amassed a nice corner of my closet that's very pink compared to the drab, dark colors that I typically wear. So, but yes, I wanted to mention the event we had last year that the Enquirer and the Holy Grail and our friend Jim Mooring there partnered on. Was such a success that Jeanette Altano, who manages or who leads the campaign for Men Wear Pink, said, hey, what if we use Paint the Grail Pink, too, as part of the kickoff? And that seemed like a great idea like 3 or 4 weeks ago. And now all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute, October 2nd's like next week as we sit here recording this. We're at the end of September. Next week is already October. And so we had this event later in the month last year, but now it's one of the kickoff events, which I'm really thrilled about. So on October 2nd at Fountain Square at noon is Paint the Square Pink, which all the organizations that are under the American Cancer Society here that are raising funds and awareness in October get together and kick off the month. And then that night, Sherry, starting at 5 o'clock at the Holy Grail Tavern and Grill.
Fun event last year.
At the Banks. Will be Paint the Grail 2. So just like last year, we're going to have, he was so popular. We had Bronson Arroyo performing. He's going to perform again. Got some secrets I can't reveal right now. Some special celebrity guests popping up. A kick-ass live auction, silent auction.
Last year he had Taylor Swift tickets.
You know, I don't think we have Taylor Swift tickets.
That's all right.
We got some good stuff and some good bourbon on the silent auction. It was just a fun night. Jim and I were overwhelmed at the response afterwards where people said, I wish I would have known this was happening. I would have been there because it was a new event and we were just testing the waters with it. But no, we're full on in Paint the Grail 2. Wednesday, October 2nd, 5 o'clock, $10 suggested donation, all the proceeds. And Jim Mooring, I mean, when we say all the proceeds, like his take that night for everybody that shows up and orders food and drinks, those proceeds go to the campaign, everything we take at the door, everything we take at the silent auction. But really, it was just a fun night, you know?
It really was. And I'll be there, you guys, so stop by and we could talk, you know, city.
Give Sherry
we
some tips.
We have not had a Politics Extra Facebook group happy hour lately, but for those of you who are listening, we kind of have like a faux one. I'm happy to talk politics all the time.
You know, we'll see if we can get some of quote unquote your favorite Enquirer personalities there too. Like maybe Keith Pandolfi can show up and we get Jason Williams maybe. He doesn't like to go out, you know. He's a homebody. But I'm gonna drag Jason Williams out so he can hold court. And we'll see who else shows up.
Okay.
Last year Kenny Anderson showed up. We auctioned off a Ken Anderson jersey autographed by him. That was a big deal. So lots of stuff like that, but more than anything else, it's about starting the conversations about how important it is to get your mammogram, to understand how early detection just increases the odds of a great outcome, you know, saving lives through awareness. And, you know, over the years, I've raised a lot of money, but last year, the moment that, like, floored me was someone came up to me at Paint the Grail and said, you're not going to believe this, but I have been putting off getting my mammogram, and because of what you're doing, I finally got it. I told my sister to get one, and thank you. And that's what it's really all about. You know?
You never know who's listening and like does the one thing.
Or yeah, you know, Jeanette likes to say, you know, if one person listens to us and acts on it, then our time was well spent. So, but we hope more than one person.
Yes,
obviously.
Agree.
We want to get the word out. So, you know, everybody's invited. Hope to see you at the banks on October 2nd.
Yes.
All right. Well, should we wrap this up?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of That's So Cincinnati, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. Tonight, I want to see it in your eyes. Feel the magic. There's something that drives me wild.
If you enjoy the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
Finally, if you value local journalism, and I know you do, and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now's a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer from new subscribers. And tonight, we're going to make it all come true, because girl, you were made for me, and girl, I was made for you.
Thanks again. See you next week.